hold of us on Twitter or on Facebook, The Weekend Gardener with Nikki Jabor. Or heck, you can just tweet me right now, as I mentioned, Twitter, Nikki Jabor. Call us 1-877-801-8255. Just about 7 or 8 minutes left for calls. So if you have a question, pick up the phone and dial us. Again, we're talking intensive gardening and crop rotation and composting and a whole bunch of stuff. Just a bunch of gardening questions with the author of Gardening for Geeks, Christy Wilhelmy. And again, Christy, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it. This is great. Your book is fabulous. And we just had a question from Michael. He tweeted us wondering what are some edibles that can work, you know, in partial shade. Do you have any favorite edibles that you like to grow in partial shade?
I do. A lot of you want to stick to the greens. Partial shade is basically anything that's under 6 hours, kind of between 4 and 6 hours of sunlight. And so, kale, chard, lettuces, those all work really well. And I've heard from some people, I haven't really experimented with this myself, but some people that I talk to also can do their root crops or their onions underneath some shade. And I've also found that strawberries will work pretty well in partial shade, too.
Oh, that's good to know. And actually, it's funny, we just had another Twitter question from Nada about strawberries. She was wondering how to keep aggressive spreading plants like strawberries from spreading throughout your whole entire small garden.
That's a big problem, especially with things like mint, right?
Oh, mint. And I did that the first year I had a garden. Big mistake. Oh, my gosh.
That is a first-timer's mistake, actually. We're mentioning first-time mistakes. But, yeah, for things like mint, I will plant them in a pot and then bury the pot. So it looks like it's in the ground, but it's actually contained a little bit.
Exactly.
And with strawberries, they have runners, and those are called daughters. And some people will just snip those off as they spread. Others will root them, and then once they take root, you can cut them. And so, you know, if you want to give them as gifts to a friend, you can root the daughters in a separate pot, and then once they get established, cut them, you know, cut the cord, and then give those to a friend, and they can, you know, take care of them for you.
That's a good idea.
Have them at home, and you won't feel bad.
Exactly. Yeah. I do feel bad when I root them out, and you just throw them in the compost. You feel like you're wasting opportunity, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, are there any other big mistakes that many of us make the first time we start gardening?
Yeah, there are plenty. I think first-timers do a lot of things similarly. So the first thing I can think of is don't start too big. You know, start small, and then as you get excited and more enthusiastic and more confident, then spread out. A lot of people will start with a huge area and then get overwhelmed and feel like a failure and stop.
Yeah, that's
so
good advice.
And then the one that I think everyone has done this at least once. You only need one zucchini.
It's true, but I still plant six only because I want the variety. But you're right, you do need one.
It's true. Well, so you're one of those people who leaves them, you know, leaves the excess in your neighbor's mailbox and
yes.
runs off.
Yes, I usually leave it. I ring the doorbell and run. That's what I do.
Yeah.
There's no shame in that. That's okay.
There's no shame in that.
Yeah.
Right. But there's an old adage, you know, like don't leave your cars unlocked on Sundays in the summer. You'll end up with a giant zucchini in your back seat.
It's true, gosh. But yeah. I do find too, do you ever use the blossoms for cooking? I often pick the blossoms so I don't get quite as many fruits.
Oh yeah, I'm a little bit greedy that I do let it go.
Okay.
Because I only have the one plant, so I just get as many as I can.
Yeah, and do you have a favorite variety? I'm always on the lookout for more varieties.
Well, I'm a big fan of heirloom and open pollinated varieties. So I love Cocozelle, which is it's a striped dark green variety. And then Rhone Denise is a French variety. They're shaped like little softballs, and they're cute little heirlooms that you can scoop them out and stuff them with things and bake them that way.
Man, I'm hungry. I know it's only breakfast time where you are, but it's getting past lunch, and that sounds really good. Well, since I'm asking about your favorites, what is your favorite tomato? Do you have a favorite tomato?
It's like choosing a favorite child. I have several favorites, and, you know, because we have this coastal scenario where I live, I'm growing a lot of coastal variety tomatoes, or at least the kind that do well in that area. So I'm a big fan of a Czech variety called Stupička. A lot of people pronounce it Stupice, S-T-U-P-I-C-E, but it's Czech, so it's pronounced Stupička.
Okay.
And I love that one. I also love this one called Jeune Flamme or Jeune Flamme, and that is an orange, kind of a little bigger than a salad-sized tomato. It's sweet like candy and delicious. And I'm a big fan of yellow pear tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And black cherry are my new favorites.
So you have a lot of favorites is what you're telling me.
I do. I grow 23 different varieties every year if I can help it. This year I cut it back to 16.
Well, you know, you sound like me, actually. You know, I end up with way too many tomatoes. But how can you, you know, not with all those, the diversity out there, right? Oh, my gosh.
I know. There are almost 400 or 600 different varieties of just heirloom tomatoes alone.
It is amazing. And I should ask you, because, again, we don't have a lot of time left here. What vertical gardening? I know that certain vegetables can be grown up, which saves space, and you can grow then more food. What are some of your favorites that you know, edibles that you can train up?
I grow my cucumbers and I grow melons up, and you sling them with, you know, old pantyhose or a t-shirt so they support the melon as they grow vertically. Of course, pole beans. I love growing Christmas lima beans, and they take over the whole trellis. And I've done tomatoes on a trellis as well, but now I just do cages with those because they're vertical, of course, but you can kind of contain them a little better if you do trellis them in some way.
And I have another question here. Well, this will be the last question we take today. It's again from Edie, and she wants to know if she should add soil to her garden every year, her vegetable garden, or compost or manure. What should she do to enrich that soil every year?
Compost, compost, compost. Everybody can benefit from compost. It's it solves both clay soil issues and sandy soil issues. It works like a sponge to hold nutrients in the soil. It helps flow, you know, air flow through it, and it helps promote soil microbiology. So it's the best thing you can do to your garden.
And do you actually, how many compost piles do you have?
I have a 3-bin system that I turn, you know, I start at one end and I turn them and turn them until I get to the other end and harvest out the end.
Okay, that sounds good, yeah. I've never been able to produce enough compost. I try, but my gardens keep growing and I keep needing more and more.
Right. That's one of the things that I talk about in the book. It's John Jevons' method of growing. You're growing crops that provide a lot of biomass for your compost bin, so then you can get enough compost as a finished product. It's brilliant. And so if you grow things like corn, the stalks make great biomass, and legumes like fava beans and sunflowers, because those stalks make really good biomass too. It turns into a lot of more compost than what you're probably used to, and then you end up with enough compost for your garden for the season.
I also heard that, I think it's comfrey. Comfrey is really an herb, but it produces such a lot of biomass that it's really good to put next to your composter.
It's a wonderful herb, and I think it's used a lot in both permaculture and biodynamics, I think, because it's something that you feed to chickens, too, because it's high protein.
Okay.
So it's one of those really kind of miracle things.
Cool. Well, you know, there's so much information in your book that I think anybody who's, well, gardened for years, like me, or new to gardening for geeks, it's so packed full of information. As well, people can find you online at gardennerd.com. Christy, this has been so interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it, and I hope you feel better soon. And thanks for joining me, even with your cold.
Thank you.
Take care now.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And again, that was Christy Willamy, who is the author of Gardening for Geeks. Really good book, available everywhere. Megan, do we have a winner for the book, Gardening for Geeks?
Yeah, Gardening for Geeks. Yeah. Our winner is Patrick, and I will be calling you soon.
Patrick, congratulations. You will love this. Keep me posted on your progress as you read this book. It's fabulous. All right, next week, we're going to talk roses, heirloom roses, with the beautiful nursery that's just in Hammond's Plains. We're also going to talk container gardening with Crystal Godfrey of Secret Gardens with Crystal. And we're going to talk, check in with our tomato man, Craig LaHoulier. He's going to join me to tell us how to grow the best tomatoes ever. All that next week, Father's Day show coming up on The Weekend Gardener. Have yourself a great week.